Hi, I'm Aman.
And I'm Lena.
And welcome to Grounded Geeks,
where we make the geek world relevant.
Woohoo!
And today we're talking about the most wonderful, adorable, beautiful, magical movie called Encanto.
I know absolutely nothing about Colombian culture and I don't speak any Spanish.
Right. But that was a lot of gusto you had there, Aman. So good job.
That's what I was going for. That's what I was going for. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. But also, you know, just being upfront with everybody.
Yeah. Great. Wonderful. We love transparency. All right, Aman, what were your first impressions?
I thought this was a great movie. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And, you know, I think my first instinct was, oh, thank God, they're continuing that trend that Disney's been doing lately where all of their Disney princesses don't fit into this like particular kind of physical mold, you know, with the character of Mirabelle. I just kind of love that. You know, you've got more kids out there who can see, you know, who are more likely to see characters who look like them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of my first reaction on that. And then, you know, I mean, it was just such a beautifully animated movie. And, you know, like, I really loved all the themes in it and the lack of dead parents. You know, yes. That's another trend that I'm really happy Disney's moving away from. You know, everybody's got to be an orphan.
And it's not revolved around some love story at the age of 16, 15, yes. 14. Like, love that. It's great.
Yeah. You know, the more you think about the situation of the Little Mermaid, the weirder and creepier it is, the more you think about it.
Yeah. And it also doesn't help that the original Hans Christian Andersen tale is like way worse.
Yes.
A lot darker.
Yes, anyway. It is. And a lot more gruesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
But anyway, Encanto was lovely. It was really good. Also, just want to give a shout out to, obviously, we love the story, the songs, but also the animation. It was really, it was so detailed. There's so many layers to it. There's so much texture to it. Yeah. And
colors, so many wonderful colors.
And I think they basically did all the animation while working from home, which is also another layer of like, oh my God, how did you do this? Like, that's amazing. So really awesome there.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Big shout out to the animators.
Yeah.
And the voice actors and the directors. And, you know, I think Lin-Manuel Miranda did a really good job with the music this time around, too.
Yeah, as always. You know that for the dance song musical scenes, they had, I was watching a behind the scenes thing about this, but they had like actual dancers. I think they knew like different Colombian styles of dances, and they choreographed that whole scene like in person with humans, filmed that, and then the animators would base their animations on these real life people doing those movements. So I thought that was super cool.
You know, I think that's always been one of Disney Animation's strong suits, I think, is that they put in the live action effort to make the animation good. So like, I know that for when they were doing The Lion King, I know that they actually had real lions come in, and the animators went to, you know, the African savanna and tried to figure out how these animals actually move, to, even though it's cartoons, you know, it shows through. The effort shows, whether you know it's there or not.
Yeah.
I think it pays off.
Yeah. I was also reading for Encanto, they did, this was pre-pandemic, but they, the like director and Lin-Manuel, like all the different like animators, story writers, all that, like they went on a very extensive trip to Colombia and yes. did a whole bunch of research there. And I read that the character Mirabel, her actual physical appearance was inspired by one of their guides in Colombia. And I thought that was so cute.
I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
Also, I think that's awesome.
Also, we need to recognize that this is the first like Disney quote unquote princess who's wearing glasses. That's a huge deal. There's no other character that wears glasses, man. Like in terms of like Disney princesses.
I'm trying to think.
Yeah, no, there's none.
Pocahontas wasn't wearing glasses?
No, Aman. No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't that cute? Isn't that exciting?
That is cute. And then I read online somewhere, like, if Mirabel's mom can cure injuries, why does Mirabel have to wear glasses?
That's true. Aman, stop ruining it.
Here's the thing, though. Mirabel's mom cures injuries. Is having bad eyesight really an injury?
Yeah, exactly. So no.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah. Debunked internet. There's your counter argument.
Yep, exactly. Cool.
So getting into the story, Lena, what was your, I mentioned briefly how like this movie had so many layers in its themes and whatnot, but like, what was the big one that jumped out at you?
I love that it was about trying to find your place in your family.
Okay.
I thought that was like a huge, obviously family was a huge theme for Encanto, yes. But specifically within family, I think it was about everyone trying to figure out their roles in their family and what kind of role they play and how they contribute to this wonderful magical Madrigal family. So
yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good one.
So that was cool. And for Mirabel, you know, it wasn't an obvious, you know, for everyone else, they got gifts. Antonio can talk to animals. Camilo is a shapeshifter. Isabella can make all kinds of flowers and plants grow. Luisa is super strong. So sometimes in families, you know, it's very obvious what a sibling's role is going to be or whatever, you know, oh, this person is meant to be a doctor, you know, or this person is meant to be whatever.
You know what it is you need to do to fit in, to contribute, whatever the case may be.
Yeah. And I love
that particular situation.
I loved that with Mirabel, you know, it's not like she didn't have any gifts. Like, sure, she didn't have any obvious gifts like talking to animals, but she still had so much to contribute and she was still like a core. She ended up being like this core part of their casita and family running smoothly. And, you know, she was kind of like the glue that kept everyone together. So
yeah, she was very much, I think, you know, in a subtle way, she was the heart of that family, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Future matriarch after Abuela.
That's oh, for sure. I had the exact same thought. Like,
yeah.
After Abuela, it's going to be Mirabel who's going to be matriarch of the family.
Yeah. And then I was also thinking in general about how when you have a matriarch or patriarch in a family, and whenever they pass away, it doesn't necessarily go to the next oldest person, you know? It's very much an energy, a vibe, a presence in order to be a matriarch and a patriarch, you know, someone that like the whole rest of your family kind of looks up to. And
yeah, I thought that looks up to and respect. Yeah, no, that's totally right. It that's how it played out in The Godfather.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, Freddie did not become the Godfather after the Godfather.
Yeah. Marlon Brando.
Yes. I know the actor's name. I know it was, I'm trying to think of the character.
I know. I can't. Name. Well, why do you think I said Marlon Brando? I can't remember his name, character's name either right now. What was Al Pacino's character's name?
Michael Corleone.
Yes. Michael. And it's interesting because Michael totally was resisting. He did not want to be like the next whatever.
Yes.
Don Corleone or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he had the energy, like you said.
Yep.
He had the energy, he had the vibe, and he had everybody's respect, including Marlon Brando's.
Yes.
or the character he was playing anyways. I don't know what Marlon Brando actually thought of Al Pacino.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but yeah, in the case of Mirabelle, it's really, and also Bruno. Let's talk about Bruno, even though we don't talk about Bruno, but.
Oh my God, let's talk about Bruno.
But also, I also thought another great theme for this movie was just, was talking about how when you are blessed with talents in your life, and sometimes your family doesn't understand them, you know, and it sucks. It's really awful when they don't understand and they kind of want to push you away. But that was what was happening with both Bruno and Mirabelle, you know?
Yes.
Also, it's really shitty what happened to Bruno. Like, I mean,
oh my, I know.
He was literally just especially in the song, We Don't Talk About Bruno, when they were giving all those examples of okay, Peppa, it rained on your wedding. I'm sorry. Okay. Okay, lady, your goldfish died. Okay, dude, you got fat. Like, whose fault is that? That's yours. Like,
actually, I would say that with Peppa's wedding, and I thought actually it was really funny in the song. She was like, on my wedding day, and then her husband's like, it was our wedding.
Yeah, yeah, literally.
That cracked me up. I think that gave a lot of insight into Peppa's psyche.
Yeah, 100%. On
how she viewed things and her poor husband.
Right, seriously. Shout out to Uncle Felix.
I would say that in that song, that was the one incident, the one example where I do actually blame Bruno.
Yeah, that was bad because I feel like in that case, he was being an annoying little brother because she can control weather, right? So obviously it made her nervous and then she lost control. Okay.
Exactly. That was the one, goldfish dying, guy getting fat, the priest losing his hair, all of that stuff. That was like predicting the future of things where it's like, it's gonna happen, brah. Like, yeah. But it's going to happen. But with Peppa, with the wedding, like, it wouldn't have rained if Bruno hadn't said anything.
But the thing is, they're still also very, like, relatively minor things. Yes. But he still had to basically hide from his family for 15 plus years. That's so messed up. I'm judging that he's hidden for as long as Mirabelle has basically been alive because she doesn't know anything about him, right?
So, yeah.
And I don't know how old she is. I forget how old she's supposed to be.
But also more than that, like, he went into hiding, or quote unquote ran away, specifically to protect Mirabelle.
Yeah, that too.
You know, because he saw a vision that he knew would not be interpreted favorably for his niece.
Yeah.
And so it would lead to a very difficult life for her had the rest of the family found out about that vision. However, I would say specifically if Abuela had found out about that vision.
Right.
But, you know, that whole thing also, one of the thing it drew out for me is family politics can be complicated.
Yes. So complicated.
And then it got me thinking about the word politics. All right. It comes from Greek. All right. And it literally means, I mean, it translates to basically affairs of the city.
Yeah.
All right. And not like what Mark Twain said, where poly means many and tix means blood-sucking creatures. It means affairs of the city. That's what politics means. Yeah. Right. And the thing is that it's really anytime you have a group of people working together, all right, on anything, whether it is a country, a state, a city, a family, a tribe, you know, there are a lot of people have to manage and learn to navigate, have to learn how to navigate hierarchies in whatever grouping it is that they exist in. And I would say the family Madrigal has a lot of family politics.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just interesting to see the choices that the individuals in this family made on how to navigate said politics.
Yeah.
There was this one specific scene where Abuela gets into a fight with Mirabelle's dad. What's his name?
Oh, I'm blanking on his name too.
I just remember his nose being and face being completely swollen from bee stings.
Yeah.
But I cannot remember his name right now for the life of me.
I think his name is like Agustin.
Oh, Wilmer Valderrama voiced him.
Agustin.
Yeah, he says to Wella, he just like blows up at her and he says, "I was thinking of my daughter," you know?
Yeah.
When when he was hiding away the vision.
Yeah, you know,
the green hologrammy.
Yeah, yeah, thingy. Yeah. Where she's standing in front of like a broken casita.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you know, they're all making these decisions based on their interests, even though they are a single family. Mm-hmm. And Abuela is making all of these decisions from her perspective with the intent of protecting her family, you know, protecting them from forces outside and within. Mm-hmm. You know, and I just thought it was very interesting how these different interests can clash. And that's what results in, you know, the kind of family politics maneuvering that everybody ends up having to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I just thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, no, that's so true. And especially when they were like when Luisa and Isabella have their own songs, you know, Luisa talks about like the pressure that she's under and Isabella.
Which, was my favorite song, I think.
Yeah, that is a good one. I really like Isabella's song, actually.
That was a good one too.
But they're actually both talking about pressure that they're facing. Like Isabella has this pressure to be perfect all the time, to always make the right decision, make pretty things, all this stuff. And then we find out she's like not even, she doesn't even like the guy that's coming to like ask for her hand in marriage. Yeah. So,
yeah. But it's about like expectations.
Yes. You know? Expectations. That's a good word. Yep.
Expectations that all of these different members of the Madrigal family have that they see of them, the expectations that others have of them, and their desire to meet those expectations.
Yeah.
Like, It was interesting. Like Isabella was thinking of, you know, what does she have to do to meet her family's expectations? And I thought it was interesting that Luisa's song was all about, like, it was expectations, but more than that, she was like, if I'm not strong, if I can't bear these physical burdens, I'm worthless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how I felt like those were both such universal themes. Like if you haven't felt one of those in your life, you've probably definitely felt the other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
At some point, you know, I mean, that was one of the great things about this movie. I feel like there was a message in there for everyone.
Yeah. You know, that's so true. That it's so interesting that you mentioned that. Cause I think also, you know, sometimes when we figure out the role that we want to play in our family, it usually translates into the role that we want to play in society or whatever, you know? Yeah. And then all of a sudden it just becomes our entire identity. So then whenever a piece of it starts to crumble, like it was for Luisa, you know, like she started losing her strength, then she was feeling worthless. And that's also like a nice message that Encanto was trying to say is like, this is not just, you know, this is not the only thing that makes you, you, and, you know, just because this one part of your identity isn't working the way it used to or something doesn't mean you're worthless. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Although wait, also I have a question. Why was Luisa the only one whose powers/gift was being affected?
It wasn't. What's his name? Shapeshifter kid.
Oh, Camilo.
Camilo, yeah. He would end up with a weird baby head randomly.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like his powers were fluctuating. Uh-huh. And I think, though, that Luisa's were the only ones where she was using her powers consistently enough that any fluctuations in it became very obvious in hers, but not necessarily everybody else's. Like Isabella is not throwing flowers all the time, you know,
that's true.
Was Dolores with the hearing power?
Oh yeah. I don't know if that's like a gift or a curse or power. I would say it's definitely a
curse for the family, considering how much of a blabbermouth she is.
I know, seriously. But also, how does she sleep at night? Like, there's got to be a way where she can shut out the world, right? Like, otherwise she'd just be hearing everything all the time.
Yeah, I assume it's like falling asleep in a crowded place. Like, we've all done that in our lives.
No, but I, for her sake, I hope she can like control her powers where she can kind of turn the volume up or down, kind of.
It does not seem like she can.
Oh, damn it.
I mean, she was like, I could hear Luisa's eye twitching all night.
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe in the daytime she like turns up the volume, you know, but then at nighttime she turns it off.
But she could hear the eye twitching all night.
Oh, all night, she said. Dang it. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Well, yeah. Okay. And then also maybe Peppa just seems unstable. She really just like really temperamental, always a cloud above her head.
Yeah. You'd think that somebody with powers like that would learn and want to learn how to control their emotions. I was surprised that they did not portray her as somebody who's dead on the inside.
Yeah, like she needs a therapist.
Oh my God, so badly.
She needs something. Yeah, poor thing. She just seems so stressed out.
Yes.
But yeah. And then also Julieta's power of healing, I don't know if that really stopped or was affected.
I mean, how would you tell?
It seemed like she was always cooking.
Yes, but she was always cooking, but that doesn't mean she was always healing.
Yeah, true.
So how would she necessarily know?
Well, that also, her power also seemed like she couldn't really control it. It was just sort of, it's like King Midas and his golden touch. It's like whatever she cooks, if you eat it, it'll heal whatever is ailing you.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I mean, this whole thing goes to something that I was thinking about. And the first time I watched the movie, it was actually kind of, it frustrated me a little bit that they didn't explain the miracle and the magic, you know?
Yeah.
And then I thought about it.
It's not a Marvel movie. Like it's.
That's true. but at the same time, you know, it just got me thinking about the whole notion of hard and soft magic systems.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And like, for example, in Lord of the Rings, all right, all the elves can do magic, the wizards can do magic, but it's not fully explained what the hell is going on and why they can do what they can do.
Right.
And even the power of the rings of power or whatever, like it's not really explained how they are powerful. You know,
yeah.
Like what is the power that's being granted and to whom and what are the rules and why?
Right.
All right. But the thing is that it made for a better story since it was written that way. And I think the same thing is true here. By not focusing on why this random ass candle became a magic candle and why the house can talk to people, you know, yes, like
through movement.
Like,
yeah.
It made for a better story. You know, we didn't need to know why it was failing, and it allowed for the story to focus on the themes that it was actually trying to focus on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's true.
That was good.
Yeah. Once you sort of accepted that, you know, and just kind of went into the movie, you know, just being like, cool, there's magic. Like, you know, there's a magical candle. There's a magical house. Got it. You know,
but more than that, they called it the miracle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what miracles are. They're unexplained, unexplainable. Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, unexplainable. That's true. Good things.
That was a good term for them to use.
Yes.
Also, it's interesting that, you know, Abuela was the one who, you know, this miracle happened to her, but she actually doesn't have any gift, right? Any like,
you know, I was ability thinking about type that thing. Too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was thinking about that too.
Yeah. Another reason why I'm like, obviously Mirabelle's now the next matriarch. Yep. So yeah,
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah. So
yeah. The other really, really big thing that I wanted to touch on in terms of themes in this movie is generational trauma.
Yes. Let's talk about that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And how that can have an impact generations down the road.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yes.
I think that
In a weird way, Abuela is the, not in a weird way, in a pretty obvious way, Abuela is the villain of this story.
That's so sad. When you put it like that, it's really sad.
But she is. She's the villain of this story. Mm-hmm. And unlike in other Disney movies, she doesn't end up destroyed. She ends up redeemed.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And a better person, you know? But she went through a very, very tragic experience and pushed that fear base and all of her decisions on how to raise her family, how mm-hmm. to run her family, all come from a state of fear.
Yeah. Yes.
You know? Mm-hmm. And I think there was a very interesting message there, slightly different from what I brought up, about how decisions and choices that come from fear don't necessarily have the best results.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so true. And obviously it's because she suffered such a huge loss, you know, right?
Yes.
When her children were born, she lost not only her husband, but her home, her family, like everything, you know,
everything.
And it was a very traumatic event. And so all she wanted to do at that point was somehow protect her family. Yes. And that came obviously from a place of fear. And then, you know, we realized once Abuela and Mirabel had their lovely little talk in that lake or whatever, you know, that's when I think Abuela realized that this whole time she has just been acting from a place of fear. And it's just sort of dwelling on all the sacrifices that she's had to make. And she's worried about having to make more of those sacrifices. And she doesn't want anyone else in her family to face that sort of trauma either. So,
yeah. But more than that, also that fear of losing what you finally have attained after going through those mm-hmm. difficulties, you know, and it really got me thinking in a weird way about the crises that our generation has gone through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was thinking about how so many people in my generation, for sure, entered the job market at the peak of the 2008 recession.
Yeah.
You know, and it makes me wonder how many of us still carry that trauma of being unable to make choices out of fear of losing what we have. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, this sort of stuff, these sorts of traumatic events, it can be generational, you know, mm-hmm. but it can also be very specific and continuing onwards within our own lives.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. I also keep wondering about how is the trauma of this pandemic going to play out for generations?
Yes.
Because there's just so much, I don't know. It's been the strangest past 2 years of our lives, you know,
mm-hmm.
that we totally have not processed as a society at all. Like we're nowhere close to it. As a society. So, I mean, I think about that. I think about how there's definitely so much trauma from 9/11 and the policies and everything that came after that is extremely traumatic and mm-hmm. continues to be for future generations.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of that. That whole scene with Abuela and Mirabel and the song Dos Oruguitas, which, by the way, do you know what oruguitas means?
Caterpillars, you told me?
Yes. It means two caterpillars.
Yes.
It's really cute. The whole song is about these two caterpillars, you know, Abuela and Pedro. And it's like two caterpillars falling in love who, you know, when caterpillars, they go in their cocoon because they're growing and evolving into butterflies and transforming, not evolving. But and so it's talking about how they fall in love, but they grow individually apart from one another and then they come back together as butterflies.
Oh, it's really so cute.
It's really sweet.
So, yeah
that scene makes me cry. Oh, it's really beautifully done. And also I also thought it was like a very, that scene where they show them you know, what is Abuela's actual name? I forget, but I believe
it's Abuela because that's what's written on the door, Lena.
Oh. Well, anyway, she must have some name, but no. Abuela and Pedro when they, right after they have their kids, and then they look outside and there's like fires everywhere and the whole town, and then they're having to leave on foot. They're running away to a better future. Obviously, you know, this speaks to so many actual humanitarian crises happening, and which is leading to like an insane amounts of migration. And so I thought that was very, it was, I mean, that scene is like 30 seconds long, and it's just, it's really powerful. I mean, anyone who has a heart to see, you know, that no one leaves their home just for the hell of it, you know, like,
Right. I mean, if anything, you know, that the last 20 years has shown us and shown economy. I mean, it reminds me of this whole new notion of economic psychology, where the whole idea that oh, people will move to where jobs are was totally debunked pretty soon after the 2008 recession. And pretty much the only people who were surprised at the fact that people won't just move for the jobs, the economists were the only ones who were surprised, you know. But yeah, I mean, it's exactly that point. There is a lot that keeps us in our homes. You know, we all live where we live, and to pick up and move is not actually that easy. And which, I mean, you know, it took me a long time to learn that. I don't know about you, Lena, but since we moved around as kids, I was like, yeah, people get up and move. That's just what, it's a thing that people do.
I definitely thought everyone moved all the time. Like us.
I thought that too. And it wasn't until I was older, I was like, you know what? I don't want to move. This is hard.
Yeah.
It's not easy. But the thing is that like, yeah, I mean, that's exactly the point. Like people don't just get up and move.
Yeah.
It takes a lot to have to do that. It takes either a lot of carrot or a lot of, you know, to have to do that. I mean, even thinking about our childhoods, you know, of moving around a lot, I don't think we would have just gotten up and done that if our dad's job hadn't A, reassigned him to new locations, and B, paid for relocating costs.
Yeah, that too. I mean, yeah. I mean, in that sense, you know, we had it relatively easy in terms of like moving and all that, but it was still really tough, I think, for our parents, especially our mom. So I mean, she's the one who I think made sure that it felt seamless to us as kids. Which it did. And I mean, and then, you know, we both also went through our struggles of like, you know, starting at new schools, trying to make new friends, whatever each time. But it's the same thing for our parents too. Like they really, I think it was really tough on them. Yeah. I didn't appreciate how tough it must have been to move each time until I got older.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we were kids at that time. We were idiots. Yeah. We didn't know any better. All right. Like,
Another good message from Encanto.
yet another good message that I had not thought about until we started talking about this. Yeah, for sure.
This movie literally hits on all of the universal themes. Talks about family, feeling like an outsider, trying to find your place in the world, feeling pressures and expectations from people that you love. And it's just,
I was thinking of the whole notion with the way in this movie, how individuality and uniqueness and being special is celebrated, but it's a problem if you are too unique or if you're not special in the right way.
Yeah.
And I think that is something that you also see just growing up, you know, in schools, you know, in different cliques and things like that, where it's like, yes, it's good. It's important to be special, but you got to be the right kind of special, you know?
Yeah.
Otherwise you risk being ostracized by your whatever group it is that you are trying to fit into, you know? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know about you, but I've faced that. I'm sure you've faced some notion of that as well. And that was another theme that I thought, you know, like Mirabelle was feeling very ostracized by her family, and Abuela was very hard on her because she didn't get a gift. Mm-hmm. And yet you still had somebody like Bruno who did have a gift and he was still ostracized because
right.
it wasn't really the right, he was special just like everybody else, but it wasn't the right kind of special.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know,
I mean, yeah, it goes right. Going back to like when you're the people you love just can't understand you.
Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm.
I thought that was another very interesting theme layer of yeah. themes. I don't even know how to describe this. The different layers going on in this movie anymore.
I know. Seriously. There's a lot.
I mean, before I got to say, before this movie, and I don't know, maybe even including this movie, I think one of my favorite Disney cartoons of recent memory mm-hmm. is probably Moana.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And even that I thought had these beautiful themes of family and doing right by your family, but
yeah,
even if it requires breaking the rules and things like that. But this movie, just the number of layers in the themes and the messages mm-hmm. that this movie has, I mean, it is a surprisingly complex movie. I'm surprised it's a kids movie.
Yeah. Hey, I don't think it was as complex as Soul, though. I feel like with Soul, they kind of bit off more than they could chew.
Soul was, yeah, certain aspects, they definitely bit off more than they could chew. But yeah. the themes were pretty straightforward and easy to identify.
Yeah, but it was still complicated. It was, I think, for a kid. I don't know, as a kid's world, movie.
I would say the world building was complicated. Mm-hmm. In that, because you're trying to explore the afterlife mm-hmm. and it's hard to do that for a kid's movie because, like, I mean, you know, there are entire religions and bookshelves of philosophical books on the yeah. subject.
Yeah,
you know, like, you can't just capture it in a kid's movie.
Well, that's right? exactly my point, Aman.
But in general, the theme of finding yourself and what it means to be who you are, you know, those were yeah. pretty straightforward, you know, yeah. but in Encanto, like, I feel like they're like, the more I think about it, the more times I see this movie, there's another message in there that I didn't see before. There's another message that I hadn't thought yeah. about, you know, mm-hmm. just in talking about it, discussing it with you just now, like you've brought up a few things where I'm like, oh, right. That's another message in there for kids to learn.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's true.
So in that sense, I mean, it is incredibly, like, so many layers. It's like yeah. a cake.
Yeah.
It's just like a really tall cake.
Very tall cake, yes. Oh, last thing I also wanted to just quickly mention was, I also thought it was very fitting, you know, since it's set in Colombia, that to throw in the magic and magical stuff, because the very famous author Gabriel Garcia Marquez, he was known for writing novels about magical realism, which is essentially, I think, a term that he coined himself. Cool. And so that, I thought that was perfect. It was such a good shout out, very fitting for this movie about family in Colombia. So
yeah, that's fantastic.
Magical realism.
Yeah. I am glad that Disney Animation is mm-hmm. exploring new stories to tell from different parts of the world.
I know, finally, geez.
Yes, absolutely.
It only took decades, yeah, but yeah, I'm glad it's yeah. finally Ooh, happening.
I can't remember, I read an article recently, I can't remember the name of the woman who is the head of Disney Animation now.
I do not
but remember. This somebody, I was reading an article recently, I think it was in like Fortune or something, uh-huh. but she got like an email or something popped up on her phone where it was a video of these animators in like Nigeria mm-hmm. who had made this trash talking video. Uh-huh. All right. Basically being like, we're going to make the best like animated movies ever. We're going to kick Disney's asses. We're coming for you, Disney. Uh-huh. All right. And she like saw this TikTok or whatever. All uh-huh. right. And what she did was basically had her people call these guys up, bring them to Disney headquarters. And now they have a project with Disney fully funded for an animated movie where they have full creative control. And it's going to be coming out sometime in the next few years.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I didn't. That's interesting. I didn't know that was the origin of that. But I think I've heard of this movie coming out. Yeah. Yeah, if you can't beat them, join them.
Yeah. But more than that, you know, I got to give credit to, again, I'm completely forgetting her name, but I got to give credit to her for recognizing that Disney needs to tell new stories with new voices.
Yeah.
And isn't taking that sort of shit personally and seeing it as an opportunity.
Yep.
You know, to be like, hey, this is some tiny ass studio in Africa. It seems like they've got some great ideas. Let's give this tiny studio the money that they need to tell the story that they want to tell.
Yeah, it's really awesome. Yeah.
And it's a win. And then it's a win-win situation.
See, that is acting not from a place of fear, because someone who would be afraid of that competition would do everything they could to just like squash them. So kudos to this woman, and we will include her name in the show notes.
I mean, it kind of reminds me of this story that I read a long time ago when Apple had first launched the iPhone back in 2007. All of these market analysts and whatnot were like, why the fuck would you invent a product that's going to kill the iPod? And Steve Jobs was basically like, if we don't kill it, somebody else will.
Right.
Like, you have to be willing to cannibalize your own business if you want to continue growing.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing for Disney, you know, if they don't, and this is true for all studios and storytellers, you know, from major money storytellers, rather, I should say, that if they want to stay in the business, they have to break their own molds.
Yeah.
You know, which I know we're called Grounded Geeks, but I feel like we've been talking a lot about grounded stuff and not enough geeky stuff. So I'm just going to throw it in there. With Marvel's Phase 4 and beyond, I hope they really do break away from the formula that has made them so successful, because that's the only way for that universe to keep growing and expanding.
Yeah. Yep.
And I completely agree. So far, I think they're doing a good job, like with stories like WandaVision, and I hope, you know, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness is everything I hope it turns out to be. And even though you and I were both quite disappointed with Loki, it took the universe in an interesting direction, more broadly speaking.
Right. It did. Okay. It did. And there's obviously going to be growing pains when you're trying to grow.
Yes. So, I think they really, really, and actually I think they've done that expansion with, you know, branching out with Hawkeye as well, with the whole, like, telling a slightly more grounded story, where the villain does not have to be some world-ending, dominating thingamabob.
Right. We're getting down to a street level
view of things. Which is not easy to do, to have somebody have a villain who feels just as menacing as Thanos, even though it's on a much smaller scale.
Yeah,
but I feel like Vincent D'Onofrio's portrayal of the Kingpin does that.
Yeah.
You know, but where was I going with this? Yeah, they need to break away from the Skybeam fight.
Yeah.
You know, giant beam of light in the sky. You know, I mean, they tried breaking away from it, and then they still were able to just stick it in Shang-Chi and Legend of the Ten Rings and in Black Widow somehow. How the fuck did they insert a flying fortress? Like, Jesus Christ, why is this even happening?
Yeah. All right.
But anyways. Like you said, growing pains.
Yes. Also, going back to Disney animation, one thing I do think they really need to do in terms of their how they're growing in the direction they're going, can they please have a movie with a Black main character that actually stays Black? For example, in The Princess and the Frog, she spends 90% of the movie as a green frog.
Yep.
Hated that. Also in Soul, you finally have a Black man as a main character. He spends the majority of the time as a blue blob.
Yes. Then much of the time that Black man was Tina Fey.
No, that was another character.
Yeah, no, but then she inhabited his body.
Oh yeah, that too. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's true. Yeah. I forgot.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, do better when it comes to your Black characters. Thank you and good night.
Good night and good luck.
Should we just end the episode there? I'm good.
Yeah, I think that's a great, I think that's a great segue into ending the episode.
Perfect. Yeah. As always, everyone, thank you so much for listening to Grounded Geeks.
And join us next week.
Bye.